Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined by my companion here on the podcast, Alex
Very
Brown.
Good. Thank
hey,
you,
Alex,
Graham.
How you doing? So this is an edition of Wiretaps for the week of Monday, November 25th. I did want to mention to everyone who's celebrating that I hope everyone has a safe and happy Thanksgiving holiday. Obviously, one of the biggest holidays in the United States. I think a lot of international students who are looking at business school don't realize that like more people travel to see family for Thanksgiving than, say, Christmas. So it's a big holiday. Everyone always looks forward to that in the States. Alex, how are things? I guess, you know, there's not much Thanksgiving celebration happening in England, right?
No, we're in the dark doldrums of November waiting for our holiday season, but it'll be a little while yet.
Yeah. So lots to talk about before we get into reviewing what I think are three really interesting profiles this week from ApplyWire. A couple of things I wanted to draw people's attention to, the first being we just ran a Real Humans piece on the website about Chicago Booth, and it's excellent. There's some really interesting students profiled there. We know that that the site visitors love those Real Humans pieces. And secret hint here, we're actually thinking of finding some ways to bring the Real Humans concept into the podcast. So stay tuned for that. The other big news from the past week was that Berkeley announced they got STEM certification for all their MBA program offerings. So they join Carnegie Mellon, Rochester, and I think even Duke and Wharton have specific tracks within the MBA where you can get STEM, which allows an international student who's not a U.S. citizen to stay for up to 3 years after business school and work legally. Currently, the standard is only 1 year for a typical MBA program. So, Alex, what do you think of that? That's kind of a big deal for Berkeley.
I think so. I think this is big news for any of the MBA programs that are able to get STEM certification, especially in this sort of environment that's less friendly to international students getting employment in the United States that we've talked about a little bit. And actually, I think in the podcast that went out the back end of last week is a point we addressed. Great stuff from Berkeley. And again, I think it's a trend we're going to see with more top schools, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think unless the U.S. government changes the laws in some way, we'll see all the top schools kind of lining up and getting STEM, because it's just a great way to allow international students to stick around for a few years, which is all that a lot of international students kind of want. I mean, they want to be able to take that first job at McKinsey or Google or wherever it might be and earn those kind of nice American salaries, pay off some of their debt, and then maybe, you know, either stay or return home, but have that time to at least, you know, put the MBA learnings into action in what's one of the foremost economies in the world. So we will see how that evolves. What's been going on in terms of admissions news with LiveWire and stuff over the last week since we spoke?
Yeah, I mean, we're in a little bit of a quiet period before, I mean, the beginning of December through till sort of the 20th, we're going to see a lot of activity with respect to round one decisions. We've seen, you know, over the past few weeks, lots of activity with respect to round one interview invites. And now, obviously, a lot of candidates are interviewing at schools, but there are less invites going out. That sort of part of the season is done. This last week, we saw INSEAD releasing round one decisions, and they sort of trickled out over a few days as admissions officers were calling their candidates. And then as we're recording, I'm hoping that we see a lot of activity today, actually, from LBS. It's their round one decision deadline. They do it differently to INSEAD. They tend to release decisions all in one day to their candidates. And then the back end of the week, we should see some decisions also from Emory. Again, before this podcast is published. Some activity on LiveWire this week, but it's still a little bit of a quiet period before the beginning of December, Graham.
Yeah, makes sense. So we'll be battening down the hatches for the craziness that always is, you know, December on LiveWire in terms of people exchanging information. As always, we have the chat rooms on the site and open for top schools. If you're, you know, an applicant to a top school trying to find someone to chat with, they tend to be most active on days or, you know, around days where their decision's coming. So we did see some activity within the LBS chat rooms this past week. So in any event, without further ado, I guess we can dive in. You've selected three profiles, and I noticed that all three are women this week. So it's like, you know, we should have asked the Forte Foundation to sponsor this episode or something, but some really impressive female candidates that we're going to talk about this week. So unless you have anything to add, should we move on here and get into it?
Yeah, let's get right into it.
All right. So Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person is looking to start next fall and has done a couple of years in private equity before doing 2.5 years in two different startups. So they did that move from kind of private equity into the sort of tech startup universe. They've been, you know, again, focused on tech and entrepreneurship, and that's kind of where they're heading post-MBA as well. GMAT score is a 700. The GPA is a second class honors because this candidate is from the UK, and the system in the UK is a little bit different. Hopefully, Alex, you'll be able to shed some light on that. And then they have, you know, so a total of 5 years of work experience. They're looking to stay in the UK or in Europe after business school. And the schools that they are targeting are Columbia, Harvard Business School, and Stanford GSB. The last tidbit of information I wanted to share before I get your take on this is that again, this is a woman. She's born in Latin America and moved to the UK with her family during high school. So has a couple of different languages, actually three, because she took a third language while in school, and you know, went to university at a top five UK institution. So that just gives the background there. What do you make of this candidate? They had some questions for us, and I know you had some dialogue in the comments on the site.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not quite sure about this candidate's sort of sense of humor and how she likes to be entertained, because you called this podcast useful and entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining. Then, I saw that, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. And then she went on to say that she took this third language for fun. So obviously an interesting candidate. I have to say, Graham, and I think you'll agree with me, that her work experience and extracurricular activities are gold standard with respect to applying to top-tier MBA programs. What do you think of what she's done to date?
Yeah, I could not believe it. I mean, it's one thing to dive into PE right out of university, but it's another to then leave that and go work for some tech companies. I mean, she's currently with a startup that's raised like £23 million, of which she did the last round, helped you know, to lead the last financing round, which was £6 million. And I also liked, I mean, she's doing some really interesting extracurriculars. One of them that jumped out at me was helping minorities learn how to code and, you know, find employment in tech roles. So, yeah, I mean, really interesting work experience and leadership experience, it would seem. So, yeah, I'm kind of always a fan of people who are, you know, kind of global citizens or who can show an admissions committee that they've learned a lot about different environments. And the fact that this person spent, you know, first part of her life in Latin America, then moves to the UK, does university there, might now be going to the US for an MBA. I mean, there's a lot to like. And I think the schools will appreciate this profile big time.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the background, Latina, working in London and Europe, but the quality of work experience and, like I say, the extracurriculars, I think, is gold standard. So the sort of, I'm not saying the elephant in the room, but the concern that she has is the combination of GMAT 700 and GPA, which is what we call a 2-1 in the UK. Which, quite honestly, when I was at university, which is, you know, decades ago, a 2-1 was very impressive. But I think with grade inflation, that sort of band of 2-1s has expanded. So she's a little bit concerned about that as she targets what I think she needs to target is the very best programs. What do you think about that combination, Graham?
Yeah, so I mean, I am of a mind that a 2-1 from a top school, and I, you know, I don't know, I haven't looked at the recent rankings for the UK, but my understanding is the very best schools are like, you know, Oxford, Cambridge, LSE, King's, Imperial, those sorts of institutions. And so if she went to one of those institutions and finished with a second class honors, which is called a 2-1, not to be confused with a 2.1 in the US.
Yes.
You know, it's probably more like a 3-something, I would guess, right? If we had to compare it, it's probably like, you know, it's not a 3.8, which would be a first class honors, but it's probably like a 3.2 or something. I don't know. So I'm not so much worried about that, particularly given the success in her career. And even the GMAT, you know, 700, you know, it's not, it's going to be below average at the school she's applying to, but it's not so out of bounds that it sends out a, like a red flag. But the thing that did strike me was the math percentile. So she has a 46 raw score on the quant, which amounts to a 57th percentile. And that was a little bit of a red flag for me because, you know, it's the one area that schools sometimes pay careful attention to. I also, it was a little puzzling to me too, right? Because here's someone who's leading, you know, financing activities for a startup and clearly comfortable with numbers. So I was a little puzzled by the result. With all that said, I frankly, like, I think this is still someone who can get in to a top program. I'm a little concerned that the school selection doesn't make for incredible odds in the sense that, you know, she's got Harvard and Stanford, which are kind of long shots for, you know, people of her profile with 780s, right? It's never a guarantee to get into those schools. It's just always kind of a roll of the dice. And then Columbia, having not applied in the early decision round when it's much easier to gain admission, makes it a little tight. So I know you gave her some advice to maybe add a school or two or at least consider it. What did you tell her? You had said, I think you mentioned a couple of schools, right?
I mean, obviously, again, if you look at her professional experience and her sort of basic profile and working in Europe and so forth, I think she clearly could be a superstar for Harvard and Stanford. But like you say, you know, these numbers might drag her back a little bit. And as you say, Columbia is going to be quite suspicious that she didn't apply early decision. So, you know, Columbia will be thinking, are we a safety school? Did you not get what you wanted? Therefore, you're applying to us sort of thing. So if she does apply to Columbia, then she really needs to make a very strong case of why she wants to be in New York City for her MBA experience, which is, you know, it doesn't matter when you apply to Columbia, you've got to make that case. I suggested also to consider Sloan. Seems like a good fit to me, as well as the Wharton School, in terms of sort of spreading the risk a little bit across the top schools for an application. So I think, you know, again, I think the work experience and stuff, she really does stand out in that regard. She does suggest that there's a possibility of retaking the GMAT. There's a possibility of pushing that score up. She says in her practice test, 750 is her top range. So whether it's worth doing that, even if the new GMAT score comes in after the round two deadlines, it's something that she would have in her bag to then and enter in the conversation during interviews and stuff. It might be very useful. Obviously, it wouldn't get them to the interview stage, but if she got the score and went to an interview, that would be a beautiful piece of information to add to the dialogue. Obviously, if she did retake the test and it was after the deadline, she can submit the score directly to the schools. She also asks Graham, does having CFA level one even help? Well, how do you address that?
I mean, I would say it doesn't hurt. I think for better or for worse, schools look at CFA as a kind of professional certification. So it gets lumped in with like the caliber of your work experience in some respects. And then on the other side, they look at GPA and GMAT for like academic aptitude. So they just, I don't know why, but that's always been the way it's been viewed. So, but it doesn't hurt. I mean, I think if I were her, I might include a note in the optional saying, I recognize that my quantitative percentile score is low on the GMAT, but my hope is that the, you know, quantitative nature of my work experience, along with the fact that I've sat the CFA one and, you know, am just constantly engaged in doing, financial calculations, et cetera, will help the committee to be assured that I'll thrive in the MBA curriculum. I think that's it. I mean, I think obviously if she wants to take it again and give them another test score, as you say, later in the process, couldn't hurt. I'm sort of torn about if she has this extra time, should she spend it getting another application or two together for the Whartons or Sloans or something? Or should she spend it on the GMAT or both? That's kind of a tough question. But I do think I mean, another question I had mentioned to you before we started our recording of this episode, I had said, you know, she wants to be in the UK or the EU. And I just sort of wondered, like, where's LBS or INSEAD on this list? I mean, I recognize that for many, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, some of these top schools are considered better than the best European schools. But as you move down the list, you know, I think one could make an argument that if she's going to be working in London or somewhere on the continent, that INSEAD and LBS might be just as strong as, say, a Columbia or you know, another school out there. So that was just another thing that sort of caught my eye about her candidacy.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very fair point.
So I think we spent enough time on her, but I do think I wish her the best of luck. And I do think, you know, at the end of the day, she sounds really incredible, and I would hate for a test score to kind of hold her back. So I think, you know, put in a good application, and I'm hopeful that, you know, she'll get some good news. I just do think that the school selection makes me a little nervous just because of the nature of, you know, some of these top schools being so selective. So anyway, food for thought as she moves through the process here.
Yeah, best of luck.
So let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person's looking to start next fall. And has actually already applied to Cornell, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, and NYU Stern. They'd worked and are working in brand management for a well-known consumer goods brand. They have a 317 on the GRE, a 3.83 undergraduate GPA, 3 years of work experience, currently located in Atlanta, and looking to head north to New York City or Chicago. It's actually a woman, and she did mention that she's had some decent success thus far in the sense that she's gotten interview invitations at Ross, Kellogg for the one-year Kellogg program, Fuqua, and Johnson. And in fact, the Johnson interview is part of the Park Scholarship lead weekend. So she's on the right track with these schools. She hasn't heard anything from Stern, and she's worried about that. Although personally, they tend to be a little slower than other schools, so I wouldn't give up hope there. But Alex, what do you make of this person? You had a lot of back and forth. You know, there's kind of some interesting quandaries here with respect to the test score and things like that. So what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, she also said she loved the podcast, so I like this person immediately.
That's right. I missed that. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think, Graham, this is a classic case of a candidate with a strong application all around, except for the test score. So I think that's fair to say. And as a result of this, this candidate has received a good amount of positive feedback so far in terms of interview invites. So at the end of the day, the reality is that test score can still come back and bite them. It's not, you know, you've got a set of interviews, so therefore the school reckons your profile is really good. Let's interview, see if we like you, and then we admit you. You know, schools generally are going to interview the top half of their pool or the top third or whatever it is. But if there's at one point in that profile that they've identified as a weakness, even though it still puts you in the top third or top half, that weakness is still going to be there after the interview. It's not that you all have a clean slate when you interview and it's only the interview that determines your success. And I think this candidate is fully aware of that. But I wanted to make that point, and I think we've made that point in previous podcasts. So the candidates interviewed already at Ross, Kellogg, and Duke felt really good about their Ross interview, so that's very good. And thought the Kellogg and Fuqua interviews went well. So let's now, fingers crossed. And as you say, Stern's process is always a bit of a mystery to us in terms of when they invite people for interviews. So it could be today, it might not happen, or it could be literally in another 3 weeks. They seem to have a bit of a random process there. So that all said, the issue here is, what should this person do with respect to the next round? And that will obviously be driven by how successful they are in this round with the ultimate decisions. So if they get an admit out of this group, then they can start looking up, be a bit more aspirational potentially, with potentially some more M7s or look at Tuck, Hass, Yale, those types of programs. Or if they blank, which I'd say is about as likely as if they get an admit, you know, that's just sort of the nature of how it works. If they blank, then they've got to potentially adjust down a little bit. And that might be looking, I'd suggested Amory, Kelly, they'd suggested Keenan Flagler. They're an alum of Emory's undergrad, so they've decided not to, to consider that. So anyway, those are some of the issues. The reality, Graham, might be that they go on the wait list, right? So no matter how much you hate this process, this is a classic case of someone likely to end up on at least one or two wait lists, where the school is basically saying, we really like you, but... And that but is generally one aspect of the application that is a glaring sort of mismatch with the rest. In this case, it would be the GRE score. The problem, I think, in this person's case is they've taken the GRE and the GMAT on a number of occasions, and it's more of a question of being a poor test taker. They can reinforce that. I mean, they got a 3.83 GPA, Graham. So this person's got to be smart, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's clear that, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people just don't do well on these tests. And she mentioned she'd actually taken the, I guess, the GMAT a couple of times and the GRE once. And I mean, but yeah, what sticks out to me is that 157 quant score on the GRE, which is, I think it's like a 64th percentile. So again, low on the kind of math side. I think I failed to mention that she wants to stay in the consumer goods kind of domain. And she listed a whole bunch of companies, including, you know, Nestle, Nike, PepsiCo, Procter & Gamble, et cetera. So, I think you're right. This is one of those thick cases where, like, everything lines up quite well. You know, great work experience, interesting, you know.
Yeah, I'd almost say very well. I mean, the first candidate had superstar experience, but I think this person is not far behind, if behind at all.
And I like the volunteer activities.
Yes.
I like that she runs an Etsy shop on the side and has had kind of some entrepreneurial and creative experience because of that. So I think, it seems to me like at least thus far, the schools are willing to kind of overlook the testing issue. And she did write an optional essay about it. So I think she's been out in the open with it. I think she just sort of has to wait and see what happens with the schools here and be ready, as you say, to kind of throw in an app or two in the next round if all kind of fails. I think that the worst case scenario for her would probably be obviously getting rejected everywhere would be bad, but I think getting waitlisted everywhere would be almost equally kind of confusing because she'd have to sort of simultaneously mount a waitlist strategy campaign and then also get in an app or two to a Keenan Flagler or other options. One quick note that I think will be helpful for our listeners is that you pointed out she went to Emory undergrad and as a result is kind of ruling out the MBA program there. I think, you know, that's something we see quite a bit of, and I think it actually does make sense in many instances because, you know, on some level, part of the appeal of going to a school can be the network and what you're going to tap into alumni-wise and things. And so if you already have access to that network, it's always nice to spread yourself around. But also, I think it's always nice to get a different experience. There are plenty of kids who go to like Wharton undergrad who don't really want to come back. Of course, then there are those who do who can't get enough of Penn or something. But it does expand your horizons and your network. So I understand her point on that.
And she's currently based in Atlanta and wants to be in New York or Chicago post-MBA, so that does make sense. I wish this candidate the best of luck. It is frustrating that a test score can limit the scope of opportunity with respect to what I would consider is probably a substantially good application all around in all other aspects. So is the GRE score of 317, is it going to be the lowest score in some of these programs she's applying? Probably not. So, you know, it's at the lower end of the range. That's the reality. So hopefully at least one of these schools can look beyond it, look at that 3.83 GPA, look at the substantial nature of the experiences that she's had, and she ends up in one of the programs she really wants to attend.
Right. And I think people should give a listen to that GRE versus GMAT podcast that I recorded. That was a fun exercise. But one of the things I was going to say and that we talked a little bit about on that podcast is, you know, if she is at the low end, for the GRE, that may not be the worst thing, because some of these schools don't even report GRE averages publicly, and even those that do, it's such a small amount of scores compared to the larger kind of GMAT pool. So it, you know, it might be actually not a horrible strategic decision that she made to kind of go and take the GRE and put that score in. It, you know, obviously I don't know how the GMAT turned out for her, but in any event, I wish her the best of luck too. And yeah, we'll just see. I mean, I'd be great if she could follow up and comment here on the site and let us know how do some of these results turn out, or at least, you know, put in a decision wire entry on the site. Those are always really useful for everyone to kind of follow along. So, yeah, let's move on and let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number three. So this person, again, a woman, has been working as a teacher, dean of students, as well as an ed tech partnership specialist. She's hoping to go to business school in the fall of 2020, so next fall. Wants to get into consulting and would look at Accenture, Ernst & Young, McKinsey for kind of a short-term goal. Has worked for 5 years already, located in Boston, and wants to kind of stay in that Northeast corridor, maybe Boston, New York, after business school. The GPA is a 2.68, and the schools that she is considering are Columbia, Tuck, Harvard, MIT, NYU, Wharton, and Yale. So kind of a who's who of the best schools on the Northeast kind of corridor. And she mentions that she's a first generation college Latina student who had a pretty difficult time navigating university after transferring from a community college. And that's why, you know, the kind of GPA really suffered, that 2.68. And then she did Teach for America and moved to the East Coast to teach sixth graders math, and went on to pursue a graduate degree in a master's in ed in kind of curriculum and teaching. And in that degree, she actually has a 3.7. And I mention that because I think it's going to be important. She has yet to take the GMAT, but is hoping, working really hard to kind of break the 700 mark. So that's, you know, in planning stages. And so I think these are all going to be kind of round two applications. And she has a number of different volunteer activities. Alex, what made you pick this person out? And maybe tell us a little bit about some of the conversation you've had with her on the site.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, she's planning to apply in another year, Graham, just to be clear. And so she has more time to plan, which is a very good thing. So why did I pick this candidate? There's some similarities with the other candidates, but the difference here is the undergraduate GPA is the elephant in the room rather than the GMAT or GRE, as in the case of the previous candidate. And what can she do to overcome what is, you know, 2.68 is obviously going to stand out to any admissions reader. So, you know, she like you say, Graham, she started, you know, in community college and then transferring. That sort of signals to me that this is also a bootstrapping type candidate, which again admissions officers like. They sort of, she's first generation college, I think. Is that correct? Did you say that?
Yeah, she said first generation college Latina student. So, yeah.
So clearly her pathway has been, you know, not so readily available and accessible as perhaps, you know, the typical MBA candidate. So she's overcome that, which is very good. But along the way, she's faced challenges, and that GPA is a result of that. She has a graduate degree. She has a 3.7. So that's going to help, as you suggest. She plans, obviously, to take the GMAT, and she hopes she can break into the 720 range. Well, quite frankly, if she can do that, that would be amazing. You know, 720 is very difficult to acquire for anybody. So, obviously, the best preparation, really want to knock the GMAT out of the ballpark and plan to take the GMAT with enough time to potentially retake the GMAT. If that is necessary, which again I think she plans to do, so she's smart like that. Obviously, you know, the Teaching for America, that's a positive. I think admissions officers tend to like that. Her goals help reach my goal of consulting with a concentration in education reform. I'm hoping that over the next year the goals sort of develop further. So I think it's great that she has an ambition in the idea of education reform, but does she have ideas? How can that reform be accomplished? What does she know and what can she bring to the table to push reform through? And sort of that sort of thing. And maybe she has all that in her armour already, but if she has another year really developing that, showing that passion, showing that she's going to be an impact person post-MBA. And it's also going to be important that she can show that she's been an impact person to this date, so that her work experience, like the previous two candidates we've discussed, we've noted that they've had very high caliber experiences, and we assume they've had high impact through those experiences. This candidate's experiences are much less traditional, but she's going to be compared to some degree in terms of her level of impact, just like a traditional candidate, Graham. So what do you think of her experience?
Yeah, I really like what she's done. I mean, I think, you know, as you said, admissions officers always appreciate Teach for America. And then it seems like she's really, you know, stayed in that kind of sector. And, you know, even, I guess, one of the things that's sort of an undercurrent in her candidacy is this, you know, her kind of ethnicity and her work with, you know, other Latinos to help kind of uplift, as she says, uplift the voice of the Latino community in education policy. And she's actually, she's worked, she's volunteered on the campaign of a Latina candidate who was running for city council. So I think, as you absolutely hit the nail on the head, I think she needs to develop her goals a bit more, because on the one hand, it's sort of like, you know, she's an ed person, you know, has a degree, a master's degree in that domain, and all this volunteer activity, et cetera. But then she's like, well, I'm going to do consulting at Accenture, Ernst & Young, or McKinsey, and I'm going to focus on education. And frankly, I mean, you don't usually get to choose the industry when you start doing consulting out of business school, you know, especially for one of these types of companies. I mean, it does happen, but chances are she'd be working on a number of things. And so I'd like to better understand like the longer range trajectory and whether it includes maybe running for office or just, I don't know, working in the public sector in some way, shape or form, or with a think tank that does education stuff. And the only thing she's going to need to be careful of is convincing people that the MBA is the degree that she needs, right? Because there are degrees, like, you know, she could do kind of a public policy degree. There are a gazillion, you know, great programs in that domain. And she already has a master's in ed, although that's more on the, you know, curriculum development side and things. So I think, yeah, getting this all sorted out so that when someone says to her, why do you want the MBA and what are you going to do with it? She has a great kind of rational argument to that, but not one that kind of jettisons all of her great sort of ed work. You know, I think she wants to stay in the education sector. And so she's going to need to find out why she would need an MBA, you know, to do that and make that case clear. One other thing I wanted to call attention to is she said that she graduated with a master's in ed in curriculum and teaching with a focus on math with a 3.7 GPA. And I think the GPA is great and will help combat that 2.68 undergrad GPA. I presume that she mentioned the focus on math just to give us background and not to sort of say that that somehow makes her more ready for business school. Because I think most, you know, most admissions officers looking at a master's in ed are not going to view it as a quantitative degree, even if she was working on math curricula, right? So in any event, I wanted to mention that. But I really like this candidate. I think she's got plenty of time to take the GMAT, get her ducks in a row, and apply in round one next year. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of a, I mean, it's a really interesting candidacy, right? Because we have, at the top of the show, we talked about the woman from Latin America who directly went to the UK, went to the best schools kind of thing, and has done incredibly impressive things in the workforce, right? And here we have someone who's kind of first in family to go to college. I mean, there aren't that many MBA students at the top schools who started in a community college. And that's a massive, as you say, she's a bootstrapper, and that's a huge advantage for her. And I would think that schools would be willing to look past the 2.68 in this kind of a situation, as long as the GMAT is kind of, you know, in the ballpark. So hitting that 700 mark or better will be key.
And we've talked about this before in Wiretaps, Graham, and you talk about her extracurricular activities, focusing on sort of supporting the Latina community and so on and so forth. And you know, as an underrepresented minority, this is what we're looking for in underrepresented minority candidates, how they become mentors for similar candidates, how they help increase the opportunities for similar sort of profiles down the road, how they can have impact in those communities and so forth. And this candidate looks, on the short notes that we have here, looks to be doing that and looks to be passionate about it, which is very good. The one question I had for this candidate, and you sort of touched on it a little bit, Graham, but I'd like to get your point of view, is given that she has another year to apply, and she could just as easily apply in round two versus round one, there's no urgency because she is a non-traditional candidate, should she consider also taking an MBA prep class?
Yeah, I saw your comment about that over in ApplyWire on the site, and I think that's actually good advice. I think, you know, there's courses like MBA Math or even HBX Core, or I think they've renamed it, but Harvard has an offering. I mean, there are a number of offerings out there where you can do this stuff online. In some cases, it's not too costly, and you can basically, you know, do the kinds of work that she probably hasn't had a ton of exposure to in her master's in ed, you know, stuff like, you know, learning stats and maybe some entry-level accounting or economics, or, you know, there's usually a mishmash of stuff, even some Excel kind of spreadsheet coursework and things to get you up to speed. So I think that would be a good signaling mechanism for her if she has bandwidth and the ability to do it. I would also encourage her to, you know, reach out to the existing networks. And this actually goes for all of the women that we featured today. You know, get to know like Forte Foundation or there's a Hispanic MBAs. I think they have a new name now. I can't remember the name of it, Prospanica or something like that. But there is an organization that helps, kind of Latina and Latino or Latinx, I guess we say now, you know, candidates. And so, yeah, making yourself known to those networks and doing the same thing on the campuses of the schools that you're targeting is really important too. So I would encourage her to reach out to, you know, women in business at all the schools she's targeting, or if there's, you know, anything really, if there's an ed tech club or, you know, something that's relevant to what she wants to do or to her background. I would say that that's always good advice and that she should follow that as well, especially because she has a little bit of extra time here before her deadlines. Yeah. So, anything else on this one? Again, great, three great candidates. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but it was great to have an all-women show. I don't think we've ever done that before. So that was terrific. And I think a lot of it's serendipitous. It just depends when folks are submitting. But we do love the feedback. I mean, I think everyone was sort of commenting this week when they left their posts about, you know, enjoying the podcast. And we love hearing that.
That's how I select them, Graham. Pretty much no other way. So if you say you like what we do, then we try to feature you.
All right. Yep. There you go. So Alex, I wanted to wish you a happy, even though I know you're, you know, in England, you guys don't celebrate Thanksgiving, but given that you lived in the U.S. for so long, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving this week. And same to all of our listeners who are celebrating. Yeah, we'll be back with another episode in a week's time. No rest for us. We'll be, you know, right back at it recording, so we won't miss a beat. So thanks again, Alex, for all your help.
Very good. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Take care.